We didn't even get to argue about Edgar Martinez.
Yeah, we didn't. I told you that wasn't going to happen if you didn't let me mention it.
Edgar should be in the Hall of Fame, too.
Yeah, he should.
Love you, Edgar.
Edgar should be in the Hall of Fame. DHs are underrated.
Hi, and welcome to the Box Seat Podcast. You're looking to Husky Athletics and anything and everything sports related. I'm Chris Ankiko.
I'm Andy Yamashita.
And I'm Alec Dietz. And today we're going to go over some topics that were of interest to us over the last week. First, we'll discuss how the UW men's basketball team fared in the Rockies last week against the Buffs. And look ahead to the Apple Cup matchup on Montlake against the Cougs this weekend. Next, we'll look at the upcoming matchups this weekend for the rest of UW Athletics before moving on to the Bark, where we'll talk the NBA All-Star Game, and the MLB's Hall of Fame class. So, Chris, we'll move to you first. What happened last Saturday in Washington's 72-62 victory in Boulder?
Well, this game was a really strange one considering the trend that the Huskies were developing over the past couple games. They were getting out-rebounded, and they weren't shooting threes. Those were sort of the two common problems. But against Colorado, they sort of remedied both of those. They shot 8 of 19 from 3, and they grabbed 50 rebounds, 31 in the first half. That compares to 38, I believe, against Utah is what they had in total. Matisse Thybulle and Noah Dickerson both had double-doubles. And Jalen Noel, as usual, led the team with 19 points. Ryan Clark for the Tacoma News Tribune, he wrote an article about the fact that the entire team watched Braveheart before that game to sort of get them inspired. And Dominic Green was saying, like, first Scotland in the locker room. And even during the press conference today, Coach Hopkins was like, freedom, and that's how he started out, so it must have really worked because it was a rallying cry, and they had basically all the momentum against Colorado from, like, the 8-minute mark of the first half on.
Hey, if it works, it works, man. Sometimes you just got to do what you got to do to get that win.
Yeah, maybe they should do it more often. I think they sort of, you know, they had that substandard effort in Salt Lake City against Utah in the loss, and then they came out and played really, really well against Buffalo. Oh, my God.
Against Buffalo.
Against Colorado.
Against Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, against Tyrod Taylor. We're not even talking NFL this week. It's throwing me off.
Thank God.
I think that was a really good win and an important win because Colorado is one of those bubble teams in the NCAA tournament, so that was a really big win and put them over the top, over 500 in Pac-12 play.
Colorado just upset one of the Arizona teams, too, like last weekend, right? Like we talked about it on the show already,
well,
I think.
I think they beat Arizona, I think.
They
split against the Arizona schools at home, I think.
Yeah, they definitely beat one of them. I couldn't remember which one, but I mean, they're both good basketball schools, so.
Yeah, although Arizona State's recently sort of taken a dive.
Well, ever since Pac-12 play started, it's not been going so well. So that'll be interesting because that's one of the games coming up in a week, I think.
Yeah, if the Huskies can catch them on a down spell, that'd be really nice.
I mean, their whole Pac-12 season is a down spell.
Basically. But, I mean, you don't want to be that team that turns it around. Because, the thing about, losing streaks to me is that you can't really get a lot from it because it either means that the team's playing really bad or they're due for a really big game and you don't want to catch them on that really big game. I was talking about it in my UCLA preview for the women. They haven't been playing great in their last four games, but they've gotten four wins in their last five, but they haven't shot over 40%. Or they shot over 40% once. But to me, that's more of a sign they're due for a big game, and the Huskies really don't want to catch them on that good game that they should get soon.
Yeah, and I think the Cougs could be one of those teams this weekend. The Huskies are playing the Cougars on Sunday at 5 p.m. back at home for a little homestand. I think it's a 3-game homestand. Chris, what do you make of that Wazoo game on Sunday?
Well, obviously UW was able to pull out a super narrow win in Pullman last time, 70-65. Obviously the Cougars were in control most of the game, but UW made a late surge and they came back. Ever since the UW game, Wazoo really hasn't been playing all that well. They lost to Stanford, they lost to Colorado, and they lost to Utah. The Stanford was a home game, and then the Colorado and Utah are both on the road. Their only win since the UW game was a 78-53 win against Cal, which
not the best team.
Not the best, which UW destroyed.
But then, Cal beat Stanford, so.
At the beginning of the year,
of course.
And Stanford goes on to win, 5 conference games in a row, and then they just dropped their last two. So it's just been a crazy conference.
This has been a good season. I think good competition is always something to enjoy. So the Pac-12 is really looking like an interesting division. You don't want to know the winners from the first tip-off anyways, so.
I feel like the national media doesn't feel the same way. I keep seeing all these articles about, the Pac-12 is, you shouldn't really care about it too much, you know. It's all about, the ACC,
Big 12, sort of. It's that whole East Coast sports bias, man. Yeah. Let's be real.
Well, and it's real too, because like the Pac-12 out of any conference, it's good. I think the top. There's two teams in the conference that aren't very good. The Cougars are one of them. They're talented. They can beat you, but they're not great. And Cal's another one that isn't good. But any other team in the conference, any team could beat any other team on any given day. The
Absolutely.
The Beavers, Trey Stinkle and Stephen Thompson Jr. are both, like, a lot better this season. And they were awful last year. I was going to say something else, but they were awful last year. So, like, just the fact that, like, that team and, like, the Huskies are obviously better this year.
And you got the traditional powerhouses, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, Arizona, you know, Oregon's not as good this year, but they could still beat you. UCLA.
I mean, you can never count them out in basketball.
I mean, it's totally – Arizona and USC are probably in the lead so far. But
They're tied right now for the lead.
So, but
USC's sitting fourth, though. That's not a bad place to be.
Yeah, yeah. And they're playing – obviously, they're playing Arizona, and then they're playing ASU, who's currently 3-4 in the Pac-12 coming up in the next week. We'll preview that next week, I think, because that's not until – next Thursday, but yeah, sort of the balance of power sort of shifted, you know, when, because obviously Oregon was in the Final Four last year, and right now they're 3-4 in Pac-12 play, so.
I mean, they lost a lot of big pieces.
They lost, you know, Jordan Bell.
And who's, Dylan Brooks.
Yeah.
We talked about this a little bit last week, but yeah, they lost a lot of big key players for them, but I mean, they got a lot of, isn't Manute Bol's son going there?
Yeah, Bol is committed there as of now.
For next season. Right?
For next season, okay. Yeah. So they have some good pieces, like Peyton Pritchard, who's averaging over 15 points a game, and he's like a leader for them. And over 4 rebounds, over 4 assists, over a steal a game, shoots almost 50% from the field. Elijah Brown and Troy Brown, also both those two guys have played really well for them, both average over 10 points a game. So, like, they have some pretty solid pieces for a team that's just 3-4 in conference. So you're right, next year, maybe we're looking out too far ahead. They could be a prime team next year.
Yeah, man. That's, once again, competition is a good thing. I don't want to know who's gonna win. That's a big thing that Americans can't grasp about soccer, is the fact that there's like 6 teams in every league that you know are gonna be competing for the title. And this is American sports. We want to see competition. We want some kind of, we're Americans, we like rooting for the underdog, so we want the underdog to have a chance.
I guess I would just say one more note about Robert Franks for Wazoo, just because obviously in the big win against Cal, he had 34 points and 10 threes. And I think that did that tie like a Pac-12 record, or like some, it tied some kind of record?
Had to get close.
He had to get really
close. That's
good. I mean, it's a great performance, but then against Colorado and Utah, he had 8 and 18 points. His 18 points, actually, he shot 100% from the – no, just kidding. I was looking at the free throw line. He shot
44
from the free
throw.
That's
pretty good.
That's great.
Pretty
good. So let's move on to Alec with the weekly rundown of what's going on at UW.
Yeah, so first, obviously the men's basketball team is playing Wazoo on Sunday at 5 p.m., so Dog Pack, make sure they're in force. Then the women's basketball team will play UCLA tonight at 7 p.m., and then as part of the doubleheader for the basketball teams, they will play before the men's basketball team at 2 p.m. versus USC on Sunday. Next, the gymnastics team will be in Fort Worth, Texas at the Metroplex Challenge, where they'll take on second-ranked LSU and fourth-ranked UCLA, among other teams, in a big primetime matchup for them. The men's tennis team will host Pacific on Saturday, and the women's tennis team will be in North Carolina versus 20th-ranked LSU and potentially 9th-ranked Duke as well. And lastly, the track team will be at the Dempsey once again tonight and on Saturday, where they'll take on a few college teams such as California, Stanford, Boise, and Shailene Flanagan will be there once again to run a 3K, as well as Lopez Lamong, who is a U.S. legend, along with maybe some Nike athletes that Coach Metcalf said I wasn't allowed to talk about. It's true. There might be some that are there that I can't talk about. So,
wait,
really,
like,
it's that, like, why?
Just because, like, it's like a surprise or something, so he's like,
Oh, really?
He told me, so I have the inside scoop, but I can't say.
Are you giving us too much information right now?
Probably.
Okay, well, there you go. You heard
well,
it here
really.
First.
Well, not really. Yeah, you heard it here first.
With that, let's move on to The Bark, our weekly debate segment. And in our first topic, we're going to talk about some NBA All-Star snubs. Andy, we'll start with you. Who's your NBA All-Star snub?
All right, so for my NBA All-Star snub, I'm going to go with Paul George. Man is putting up 20.9 points per game. He's shooting almost as efficiently as he did last year when he was an undoubted all-star. And the other part of it comes from the entertainment value. I'm going to be honest. I like Draymond Green. I think he's a great player. He deserves the award. But at the same time, I'd rather see Paul George in the All-Star game than Draymond Green. What Draymond Green brings to the floor isn't what I want to see in an All-Star game where they score almost 200 points. And Draymond Green's a defensive player in the All-Star game. Paul George, while he does play great defense, is also a phenomenal scorer. He does crazy dunks sometimes. That's what I want to see in the All-Star game. And I'm going to be very sad that Paul George isn't there.
Yeah, and I think if you're arguing PG versus Draymond, most fans, because he did, I think he got the most votes out of front court guys from the fans, yeah. But he didn't get a starter because the media and the players didn't give him the votes. So the fans obviously want to see Draymond. So I see why he's in there, but I understand your point of view because he's really not the most exciting guy to watch at the All-Star game. My pick's going to be a little different. I think Paul George has had a good year, but he's not shooting a really great percentage in the last few games.
He's shooting a career best from three, 42%, just saying.
That's pretty solid, but you look at the past few games where he's 1 of 7, 3 of 9, 1 of 5. His good games are few and far between. He shot 5 for 14 in a game. He had 13 points against the Lakers, probably his future team.
You're not wrong about that.
Yeah. So my pick's going to actually be Lou Williams. I think he, Lou Williams.
Sweet Lou.
Yeah, he comes off the bench. He started a few games, but mostly a bench player. He's journeyed around the NBA. He's playing the most minutes of his career with the Clippers. I mean, he's shooting 44% from the field. He's averaging 23.2 points per game, 40% from three, over 5 assists. I think, and his big-time performances in the last few games have been amazing. He scored, 51 against the Warriors just the past week in a win.
Clippers' first win against the Warriors in, like, 6 years.
Yeah, if it was something like that. Well, Chris Paul and all those guys are gone, so now, like, the curse
is
lifted
for
them.
Show.
He had 31 points against the Rockets, another really good team. One of his former teams as well. 30 points against the Kings, 34 against the Hawks. So he's just put up a lot of prime-time performances. I think he should have been recognized for those.
What I have to really say about that is you said it yourself at the beginning when you introduced Lou Williams. He's a bench player. My man comes off against the bench. He plays against weaker players than when you're in the starting five. You're playing less minutes. And he has been absolutely phenomenal this year. And unfortunately, I think if there was ever going to be a year that he got into the All-Star game, this would have been it. But Lou Williams or Paul George, I'm taking Paul George. And even with that, I don't really think that... I think some of the All-Stars that did make it deserved it more than he did.
Well, here's the problem. Paul George plays defense, and the All-Star game doesn't require defense. So you want to see all the cool dunks.
Yeah, and Lou Williams isn't going to dunk.
Well,
yeah.
I was going to say. Well,
but he can splash. Make it splash.
He can shoot.
He can make it splash.
Shoot. And to go back on your other point.
Is he going back to the three-point? Is he going to be in the three-point contest?
I don't think so. But he started the last 10 games. You know how many points he's averaging? 28.2. Going into All-Star break, you want a guy like that who's hot shooting. I hope he's in the three-point contest. That would be amazing. But I think he definitely deserved at least a look at that All-Star spot.
What do you think, Chris?
Well, my snub is a former Clipper, and obviously someone who's basically a perennial All-Star selection, except for this year. It's Chris Paul. His season average is lining up with his career averages. He averages 18.8 this season, 8.8 assists, 5.9 rebounds. Obviously, he missed some time, but the fact that he's joined up with James Harden is basically, it's a Hall of Fame backcourt. You have Hall of Fame point guard play all 48 minutes on the court. Actually, the Rockets are 18-0 with Chris Paul, James Harden, and Clint Capela in the starting lineup. So that's quite potent.
Well, plus, I think in the All-Star game, you sort of like to see those dynamic duos. You know, like you want to see Steph and Clay together.
Let's be honest, CP3 has some of the flashiest passing you can
Yeah, and see CP3 and James Harden. You want to see, you know, LeBron and Love, although I don't know if they're on the same team.
I think they are on the same team.
Are they?
I think he did draft Love.
I feel like
he
that
did.
Would have been
he
bad
did.
If he
yeah.
didn't.
He did. And we'll get into that later. Or we can talk about it right now.
We'll do it right now.
Yeah.
We
got to keep it moving. So. What was it going to be?
Ben Simmons.
Throw out the 10-second
Real quick, we gotta shout out Ben Simmons as an honorable mention for an All-Star snub. I mean, especially in the Eastern Conference. And then in the day after he found out he didn't make an All-Star team, which is scandalous, he dropped 19, 17, and 14 on the Bulls. The Bulls are actually playing decently, and he dropped 19, 17, and 14. He almost had a triple-double at the half.
That's cold.
And this man didn't make it to the All-Star game. Let's be honest. if he could shoot the three, he'd be one of already be one of the most complete players in the game.
Yeah.
He can't shoot it all yet, but he's an unstoppable force driving to the basket. 6'10", 230 or something. He puts on some more muscle as and he's not even fully developed.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we'll get to see him in the All-Star game at some time, but I think he's the favorite for Rookie of the Year this year, and I would have loved to have seen him. Talk about fantastic dunks. That would have been incredible.
Agreed. So getting down to the nitty-gritty of the game, obviously selected just yesterday, Team Stephen and Team LeBron made their picks in the super-secret draft that they didn't televise.
And they said maybe next year.
Well, LeBron wanted it televised.
LeBron wanted it televised.
It wasn't a consensus, so they didn't televise it.
Yeah, but maybe next year. Like, keep your fingers crossed.
So, they probably will. It'll make some money.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't think of that right now.
So the teams are, for LeBron, the starters are Kyrie Irving, himself obviously, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, and DeMarcus Cousins, with his bench being Bradley Beal, LaMarcus Aldridge, Kevin Love, Russell Westbrook, Victor Oladipo, Kristaps Porzingis, and John Wall. On Team Curry, obviously Curry will be one of the starters at guard, along with James Harden, DeMar DeRozan, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Joel Embiid. And coming off the bench for Team Curry will be Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, Kyle Lowry, Klay Thompson, Karl Anthony Towns, and Al Horford. So we're going to start with Chris on this one. Who do you think's got the edge in this matchup with no defense?
I think Team LeBron has a huge edge. Just for one, that lineup has a pretty big size advantage, considering your shooting guard is 6'8", your small forward is almost 7 feet, and then the power forward and the center are teammates. The Twin Towers, they're teammates. And you got some pretty cool reunions on this team, which is kind of fun. Obviously, Kyrie and LeBron, and then Westbrook gets to play with two people that left him, Kevin Durant and Victor Oladipo, who's now an All-Star.
I hope they all three play together on the floor at the same time.
They have to. Oh, they're going to.
Who's the coach of the West? Team LeBron? Is it just LeBron, or is it...
I mean, whoever it is, it's basically just LeBron anyways, but...
Yeah, it's basically LeBron. But I'm just interested to see who makes the subs, considering it's a conference-less All-Star game.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure.
LeBron's just like, oh yeah, Russell, get on there with KD and Victor. just whatever.
Whatever. Go.
Just go. But I think LeBron has a pretty big advantage. He's got some pretty big stars on that team, and the fact that obviously Westbrook is coming off the bench is a huge spark and lots of offense, which is, you know, in a game filled with offense is something that you
don't. Russell Westbrook is one of my favorite players to watch in the All-Star game. That man is straight up goes out trying to break the rim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
I'm going to ride with Chris, which maybe that's a bad sign for Chris, considering how the NFL picks have been going.
I mean, this is the All-Star game, so this really doesn't mean anything.
It absolutely does not mean anything, which I was sad when baseball took the meaning away from the All-Star game, but in hindsight, it makes a lot more sense for the team with the best record and whatever. And it will make... I don't want to really see defense in the All-Star game. Like, maybe once in a while, like when Antetokounmpo last year blocked Curry's attempted off-the-backboard dunk. That was pretty funny, mainly because Curry was mic'd up and you could hear his reaction. He was really sad. But, no, I'm going to ride with Team LeBron for the same reasons. I mean, I look at just that starting lineup. That's, like, five Hall of Famers right there. And, I mean, you're going to put KD and LeBron on the same team, and they're not even the two biggest guys on his team? Are you kidding me? This is going to be ridiculous. Steph Curry's team is just, it looks really short. He's got three guards, whereas LeBron has four guys who are 6'8 or taller. The benches, though, like, that will be entertaining, too. I'm really looking forward to seeing Damian Lillard. I kind of forgot Bradley Beal was an All-Star, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, he sort of just kind of flew under the radar.
Yeah, considering how, like, poor the Wizards have been playing, I'm a little questionable about that. Ben Simmons for the win. I think I would have rather seen him than Bradley Beal. But Bradley Beal has deserved in the past and been snubbed. So this might be his first appearance, actually. But
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so I mean, it's deserved from past seasons, but at the same time, kind of want to see Ben Simmons. But I think that Curry does have a little bit deeper of a bench. I mean, to bring off like Butler, Lillard, and Thompson, and Cat too, Karl Anthony Towns, that'll be pretty impressive. Team LeBron's starters are just too stacked. I can't pick against that.
Are you going to pick against them, Alec?
I'm going to stand for Team Curry, actually. I think their starting lineup definitely doesn't pass the eye test of who's better. Obviously, a lot shorter. But I think they have better shooting. I think you look at Curry, Harden, and then coming off the bench in
DeRozan,
Lillard,
too. Yeah.
DeRozan can shoot. And then you got Lillard, Thompson, Lowry, Towns, and Horford. All those guys can shoot.
I agree that Al Horford is the least exciting All-Star you've ever seen.
Most definitely.
Other than Draymond.
Most definitely. Draymond is exciting in his own right.
I would put Draymond in front of Al Horford.
But he's had an all-star year.
No, he's absolutely had an all-star year. Don't get me wrong. No disrespect to Al Horford. He's one of the best bigs in the game because of all the things he does around the ball. But still, like, Al Horford is kind of underwhelming.
He's just not a flashy big man. He's not someone.
Not at all. He's definitely not. I don't want to say the new Tim Duncan because no one can be the new Tim Duncan, but he's about as fundamental as it gets.
And I also think Giannis Antetokounmpo is like, this is the perfect event for him, just bringing down the dunks and
absolutely
flying. Like, there's no defense.
Can
I think
get Giannis in the dunk contest, please.
I hope.
I doubt he'll do it because the stars never do it, but I really want to see Giannis in the dunk contest. That'd be awesome.
Well, I know Steph Curry's not doing the 3-point contest.
I'm a little bummed.
Klay is going to do it, along with Devin Booker, so it should be interesting.
Who's the defending champion in 3-point? Is it?
I think it's Eric Gordon. I think Giannis is going to be the MVP of this game. I think Team Curry is going to take this one. I think he's just going to go off. You know, you have that one guy like Anthony Davis last year who's just going to go off. This one's in L.A., so I'm not going to give any hometown vibe to anybody. I think Giannis is going to go off. It's just that kind of game for him.
I can absolutely see Curry's team losing, but Giannis still getting the MVP.
All right, and moving on to the last bit of our Bark segment, we're going to move on to the MLB and the Hall of Fame announcement that happened this week. A list that includes legends such as Chipper Jones, Vladimir Guerrero, Jim Thome, and Trevor Hoffman, and does not include Barry Bonds and Edgar Martinez. And joining us for this discussion is our resident MLB lover, Giants fan, and sports editor, Josh Kirschenbaum. Josh, I guess we'll start with you on this one. What do you think of this?
What do I think in terms of snubs or just sort of the list in general?
Snubs, the list, and then, you know, we can move on to the PED thing later.
I mean, first of all, get it out front. Everybody who made the Hall of Fame this year deserves to have made the Hall of Fame this year. I mean, Jim Thome was amazing. Vlad Guerrero.
612 home runs.
Yeah, Vlad Guerrero was an icon. With the way he swung and the way he threw, he was just...
And the way he fielded.
And the way he fielded.
That was like having two, even though it was bad.
Yeah. Chipper Jones, I mean, when I was growing up, he was the guy. He was the best third baseman that I grew up watching. And Trevor Hoffman will have 1 year in the Hall of Fame as the greatest closer in the Hall of Fame before, of course, Mariano Rivera gets up. But, I mean, he's definitely number two on that list of all-time closers. In terms of snubs, I definitely think both Barry Bonds and Edgar Martinez got snubbed. I'm sure we can have some arguments about that, but that's just sort of my general thoughts on the...
See, I would... Okay, so once again, absolutely, all the players who made it are complete icons of the game. They totally deserved it. Hoffman should have gotten in a while ago, but there's this whole stigma against relievers, which is ridiculous. He's the first player to ever reach 600 saves. His 940 save seasons are tied with Mariano for the most all-time.
He actually has more saves than Rivera, right?
No, Rivera is like a late 20 past him, I think.
Oh, okay.
It's really close. Rivera did pass him, but yeah, Trevor was the first one to get to 600. And Hell's Bells is iconic. I mean, Trevor time, he was a great closer, deserving of it. He should have gotten elected a couple years ago. Thome, obviously, 612 home runs. His WAR is ridiculous. One of the best hitters the game has ever seen. Vlad Guerrero was one of those players who felt like a Hall of Famer when you watched him. Like, his peak is actually not as long as we, like, remember it being, but watching him play, you were like, that guy is incredible.
Has to be up there with Bo Jackson and Ichiro for greatest cannons out of right field.
Oh, absolutely. His arm was ridiculous. I'm pretty sure he could hit a ball that bounced three times.
He hit at AT&T Park, they have that glove out in left field. He didn't quite hit that, but when they had the All-Star game at AT&T Park, he hit a ball 503 feet. Raw strength.
Oh, absolutely. And, like, once again, like, the definition of a bad ball hitter. The man, there's nowhere you could throw that ball where he was not going to crush it. And then Chipper Jones. Chipper Jones is one of the most iconic players. 19 seasons in the same uniform. He gave his heart and soul to the Braves organization. He's the last of that 1990s Braves dynasty team. He joins Maddox and Glavin, as well as Bobby Cox in the Hall of Fame. And their owner, actually, I think, got elected a couple years ago, too. All the players who got in this year were totally deserving. There are quite a few snubs. Ever since the Hall of Fame a couple years back didn't elect anybody, there's been a logjam of players, deserving players, who should be in the Hall of Fame. Mike Mussina gained a lot of votes. Curt Schilling is Hall of Fame worthy. If he wasn't so controversial politically, I'm sure he would already be in there. He has one of the most fantastic postseason records of any pitcher.
Adding to that, Fred McGriff is a Hall of Famer. He should be a Hall of Famer. He's sitting on 493 home runs, and the only reason he didn't hit 500 is because they went on strike in 1994. And so he would join the 500 home run club, and once you do that, you're a Hall of Famer.
We'll get to this a little bit later, but I think he's overshadowed by the fact that he played in an era with some steroid users, and his numbers look lower because of that, but we'll get to that later.
Just don't drag it on for too long. Yeah. Like, they're all pretty deserving.
No, all the guys you got in, absolutely.
I'm a Bashard Giants fan. Jeff Kent should have made it.
Oh, I actually agree with you on that. He's the leading, has most home runs by any second baseman, like, of all time.
Come what on. Percentage of the vote do you need 75. To get it? You need 75?
Barry Bonds got over 50, but he only went up 3% from last year.
I mean, going off of your point, I think a lot of people came in saying this was going to be a year that they could... The phrase I heard them use a lot was just sweep the decks. You just get a huge class, and you have obviously the four, but if you could have taken McGriff off the board and Ken off the board and Mussina off the board, especially because next year's class is going to be a huge one. I know you've got Mariano Rivera coming in, you got Andy Pettitte coming in, he's got his own baggage. There's going to be a lot of guys that you look at and you say, that's a first ballot Hall of Famer coming in next year. So the class next year is going to be even more stacked. So I know some people were trying to say, let's weed out the class of this year so we don't have a, we could have like an 10-person class.
Yeah, push through a bunch of guys this year. And there's been a lot of things about people saying like, oh, look, they're letting in all these guys into the Hall of Fame, but it's needed. Like, if they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, they deserve to be in. I don't really know how I feel about the whole 10, only 10 votes thing. Like, I understand it should be relatively hard, but at the same time, it really limits the amount of people and really affects how they vote.
I'm going to facilitate this argument, which is something that I'm sure is going to be not very hotly debated, and say that Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame.
Okay. He mainly just said that just to get me started. Barry Bonds does not deserve to be in the Hall of Fame because he cheated the game. There are plenty of examples. Like, there's always the whole morality debate, especially with players. Like, people always point to Ty Cobb, who may or may not have killed someone, depending on who you talk to. He probably did. And was also, like, a noted racist. And so people are always like, well, look at Ty Cobb. Ty Cobb never cheated in the game. Ty Cobb was a terrible human being, but he was a fantastic baseball player and a relatively-ish clean player, but he never took steroids or did anything that really affected his, made him way better than the competition. The reason I don't believe Barry Bonds or any of the PED users deserve to be in the game is because look at the other players who have done something to affect specific, like, the outcomes of a game. You've got Pete Rose, who bet on his own team. He's banned for life from baseball, will never be in the Hall of Fame, as things stand. Then you also have the Black Sox, same issue. They were willing to drop the games and got paid out by some Chicago mobsters, and now they're banned for life. Shoeless Joe Jackson, one of the greatest players of all time, was banned from baseball for life, even though he was too illiterate to read the contract he signed. The man hit over 300 in the World Series, and just because he signed that piece of paper and didn't know what he was doing, they still banned him for life. If those players got banned for life because they cheated, and their cheating had a direct impact on the outcomes of games, then why should PED users who did basically the same thing not be held to that same standard?
How do you feel about Hank Aaron?
Why?
Because he took amphetamines. How do you feel about Willie Mays?
I actually don't like Willie Mays that much because I'm not a Giants fan, but he's a legend player.
He's a legend player, and he also supplied amphetamines. How do you feel about Willie McCovey?
Is he in the Hall of Fame?
If he's not, he should be. The point I'm getting at is the thing that separates Bonds, who, by the way, has never failed a drug test before. We'll get that out of the way early. The thing about I have about the PED users is the thing they have, one knock against them is that they cheated in an age where you could cheat better than others, like people who came in the past.
I can agree with that.
Everybody in the history of baseball, if there is a biological advantage you can get, has taken that biological advantage. If you didn't, you're Fred McGriff, you're sitting on 493 home runs, and you're not in the Hall of Fame. I grew up a Giants fan. I am totally biased. Barry Bonds is the greatest hitter of all time. Barry Bonds had a greater effect on the game. If you look, just look at the intentional walks numbers. 6 of the 10 great seasons with the highest amount of intentional walks were Barry Bonds' seasons. He got intentionally walked, 140 times in one season?
Because pitchers were absolutely terrified of him. Yeah. He was juicing.
And so were those pitchers.
The Mitchell Report has... There's about 140 players on the Mitchell Report who have admitted to taking steroids. And that's still... When you think about how many players, 25-man roster, 30 teams, that's more than 100. Like, there's... The likelihood is that not all of them were. There was an interview with Eric Burns a couple years back where he was saying, like, the disadvantage of one of the other disadvantages of all the steroid users at the time is that now you're affecting the careers of all the guys who wanted to stay clean. You brought up Fred McGriff. Fred McGriff should be in the Hall of Fame. That is almost undoubted to anybody who talks analytics, but because his stats don't look as good against other against steroid users, he's not going to make it and he'll have to get in through like the Veterans Committee or something. His career was impacted and made to look worse because other people were cheating and they themselves looked better.
But the Hall of Fame is where you put the best players.
Agreed. The Hall of Fame is where you put the best players. But if we put players who cheated to get there, that sends a bad message to other people, and it makes it seem okay to cheat.
And if we take everybody who cheated out, as I said, we'd have a Hall of Fame of about five guys.
Amphetamines is a little is a weird one for me. I understand the argument that like everyone cheated, but at the same time, no one's cheating had as big of an impact. Barry Bonds is the home run leader because he took steroids. It made his career so much longer. It made him so much stronger.
Barry Bonds, and let's say he did take steroids. Steroids make you stronger. You played baseball. When you swing a bat, strength matters, but it's all about
the
timing.
Pitch and
it's all about timing. Power. It's all about technique.
No, I agree. If Barry Bonds had never taken steroids, he would be first ballot one. Easily, he wouldn't bring up any kind of controversy. Easily be the best player of all time. But he took steroids. If he was so great before, why did he have to take steroids to extend his career and prove himself to be the best?
And you just said everybody else was doing it, so he got on board the ship that everybody else was getting on.
I didn't say everybody was doing it. I said 140 players did it out of the whole pool of Major League Baseball players.
But if he wanted to retain a competitive advantage, as you said,
No, see, that's what I'm saying. He used it to extend his career and make his career longer when time would have normally cut him off. His big season was 2001, right? We can agree with that.
Yeah.
That's the season where he, according to you, allegedly started juicing. By 36, even baseball players are starting, if not in the middle of their decline. This man hit, what was it, almost 60 home runs for the next, like, five seasons? Steroids had such a big impact on the game and on the outcome of the game that I can't justify putting any PED users in. I will agree that Bonds is the closest case to being that he is the only one who I even consider of the PED users.
First of all, Bonds followed up hitting 73 home runs in 2001 by hitting 46 in 2002, 45 in 2003, and 45 again in 2004. So no, he didn't really drop off
so
that much.
Almost 50 every season.
Oh, I thought you said total.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
The only thing I would throw in for my limited baseball knowledge, but if you look at other sports, the Heisman Trophy winner hasn't always been the cleanest guy, the cleanest cut guy. Johnny Manziel was always known for getting in a lot of trouble, threw up, like, you know, gang signs and stuff during games. I mean,
probably didn't even know what they meant.
A Cleveland Browns game, he threw up the middle finger at, like, a fan or something. Cam Newton had the issue with his dad taking money. Reggie Bush, I mean, he had his Heisman stripped. I don't think it should have been stripped.
That's another episode.
We're talking about, he's still the only player of the 500-500 club, right?
Yeah.
500 home runs, 500 steals. Then he became a power hitter, and again, just as a fan, every time Barry stepped to the plate, something was going to happen.
And oh, absolutely. I can agree
you
with that.
People talk about baseball being boring, and I watch almost every game. And even if I'm not paying attention, if I'm doing homework or watching, or if I'm only sort of paying half attention, whenever Barry steps to the plate, you put down what you were doing, and you watch Barry Bonds swing because something was going to happen. He has had more of an effect on pitchers and opposing teams than anybody I've ever seen and anybody I can ever imagine coming up. Could you imagine anybody that gets intentionally walked to the bases loaded ever again?
They're doing this at Bryce Harper in high school, but no, because people aren't juicing
exactly
much now.
Barry Bonds made Major League Baseball his high school baseball.
Because he was taking those last years, 2001 on, so 73 home runs, then what did you say, like 46, 45... He was that feared because he decided, because he was juicing, because he was so much stronger.
Okay, so I'm not trying to gang team up on you, but is Tom Brady not a Hall of Famer?
Yeah,
guy who has broken the rules, a lot of rules, but just changed the game.
Mm.
Bill Belichick. I mean, those guys have done some shady things. Are they not a Hall of Famers because of what they've done?
And I'll say this, my last parting argument is this argument I read. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are the two big names in this. And then there are people that My line is like actually failing the test. So like Manny Ramirez is out for me. He failed too. Same with Jose Canseco. So the guys sort of in the shady area, it's Bonds and Clemens. Next year, Andy Pettitte comes in. And Andy Pettitte was also in that report. And Andy Pettitte admitted to using steroids. And Andy Pettitte was also the golden boy of the Yankees for so long. And I want to see if there's so much backlash against him getting into the Hall of Fame, because he should also be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
That is an interesting one. I don't think he should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I would consider him later round. But
you would consider him.
I kind of forgot about him being on the Mitchell report, if I'm being honest. But I don't know. He never struck me as a he didn't have that Hall of Fame aura. The other thing I would say about Barry Bonds, like, deciding to become a power hitter, is that Ricky Henderson decided to become a power hitter because he was that good. He just figured out one day, oh, they'll pay me more money if I hit home runs, which is basically what Barry Bonds figured out. And he didn't have to juice or inject something into his body to make him be able to do that better. Some players are just born with it. Barry Bonds was coming to the end of his career, and he couldn't accept that. So he had to take something to make himself better, and it turned out to make him the best hitter of all time, which was something he might have already been. But now that he's taken steroids, he's tainted himself.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to come back and be the hitting coach for the Giants. We love you, Barry.
Well, I would say that really put the bark in bark. So with that, we're going to end our show. Thank you for listening to The Box Seat. This has been Chris Ankiko,
Alec Dietz,
Josh Kirschenbaum,
and Andy Amashta. If you want to join the conversation on Twitter, please tweet us at Box Seat Podcast. Thanks again, and we'll see you next Friday.
I'm Aiden Walker.
And I'm Blake Peterson.
Together, we host a podcast called Cinema Adventure, where we discuss movies with important guests, talk about their favorite movies, and recommend movies that you may have never heard of before.
So join us every other Monday on the Soundbite Network so we can film you in. Wasn't that good?
It was really good.
It's a good pun, isn't it?
For more like this and other great shows covering sports, science, relationships, and the arts, visit the Soundbites website, uwpodcast.com. That's uwpodcast.com.